Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, we're fortunate on this show to be able to talk to an expert every once in a while, and he joins us now on the Harbor One Hotline, our infectious disease guru, Dr. Maciek Boni. How you doing?
Good, Greg. How are you guys?
Excellent, thank you. And I wanted to begin by asking you about the Surgeon General saying that this upcoming period of time here is our Pearl Harbor. Is that because of, you know, the surge? Is that kind of where we're at here at this moment?
I think so. I think we're starting into the surge period. But even if we back up a month, this entire experience over the next 6 months, over the next 12 months, I mean, this is our society's biggest challenge since World War II. So it is going to be the next month, but, you know, we should be prepared that there might be parts of May and June that are difficult as well. So let's talk about why April might be this very important month. So there are states that have come up to large numbers of cases. So Washington State, New York were the first hit. Massachusetts is up to 12,000 cases right now. And over the next month, we're going to see if some of these states have done a good job at slowing down the epidemic or flattening the curve. And Washington already has some promising data over the last 10 days. So due to their lockdown and the physical distancing that they've implemented, over the last 10 days, Washington State has stabilized at about 500 to 600 new cases per day. And the good news in that is that those case numbers are not going up. And Massachusetts and many other states that are sort of part of the second wave are going to see in the next week or two if those numbers have stabilized or not.
Does what's happening in Spain and Italy provide some hope for us?
Yes, a little bit. So in both Spain and Italy and France, so three European countries that were hit quite hard by the epidemic and three of the earlier countries, just in the last week, new cases and new deaths have either stabilized or gone down. And when we look at the data and when we see that they've gone down, it just means that they've gone down over the last few days. So it's a little too hard to, you don't want to read too much into that right away. But yes, this is an indication that the physical distancing measures are working, and we need another couple weeks to sort of know that with certainty.
Dr. Boni, you retweeted a piece from Wired last night with the comment, "Not everyone with an academic title is an expert on COVID." Can you give us some guidelines on whom we should be listening to or believing? There's so much information out there right now.
Yeah, well, wow. I am really impressed that you guys follow this stuff, but this is a great topic of conversation. So since this pandemic hit, everybody's become an armchair coronavirus expert. And if you follow this stuff on Twitter, everybody's got their opinions. And some people put forward their opinions with great confidence, even though they don't have a background in epidemiology. So you would like to get advice from some academic group or some public health group or some state public health agency where the epidemiologists have, say, more than 10 years of experience working in epidemiology. So every Department of Health has that. The Massachusetts Department of Health website has great information, and they have great people working for them. And you guys at Harvard have a great infectious disease research group at something called the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics. So that's another source of information if you follow the academics there and what they tweet about, the articles that they promote. That's the right place to get information.
So we can't blame all of this on 5G.
That's right. You cannot blame everything on 5G.
Dr. Boney, the weather is going to be increasingly nice here for the next couple of days, and then a couple of days later it's going to be nice again. So you have to expect that a lot of people that have been quarantined or sheltering in place are going to emerge from their homes and caves for a little while. Are there any extra precautions people should be taking aside from just not coming within 6 to 8 feet of each other? And are there any new developments that you've learned about this disease that should worry people if they are out and about too much the next couple of days?
If you're just going outside, I don't think you need any extra precautions. If you're going for a ride, for a bike ride or for a run, you're not within 6 feet of other people, and the virus does not travel in clouds around your neighborhood waiting to infect you. The virus is on doorknobs and on tomatoes in the grocery store and on other people's hands. And yes, if you're standing close to somebody, they might cough it on you or breathe it on you. But if you're outside getting exercise, going for a walk, this is a great way to maintain your sanity during the lockdown. And as the weather turns nice, I encourage all people to take advantage of that. But yes, don't congregate in groups where you are standing very close to people for a long time and talking with them.
Oh, now you have me nervous about tomatoes.
Yeah, I just crossed that off my list.
What is your advice when it comes to buying things at the grocery store?
The grocery store is the most difficult scenario to sort of parse out here, because it's the one thing we all have to keep doing, and it's the one place where the physical distancing is the hardest, because you go touch a can of beans, you put it back on the shelf, and somebody else touches it a couple of minutes later, and who knows, you could potentially transmit a virus that way. So what I do at the supermarket is I make sure after I leave that I immediately wash my hands with an alcohol hand rub, just in case I touched something or was close to somebody and I got some virus on my hands. I make sure that while I'm inside the supermarket, I'm very conscious not to touch my face, not to stroke my chin, not to rub my eyes or anything like that. And if they're itchy, I just let them stay itchy. And those precautions should help.
And you may have addressed this briefly last time you were on, but we had a texter earlier asking about the mail and about what you should do with the mail. Does this virus live on, envelopes, on paper, on cardboard?
The virus can live on surfaces, and some of the earlier studies that came out showed that it lives for shorter periods on metals and for longer periods on plastics. And yes, if you want to be very careful, you can spray everything down that you get with a Lysol or wipe it with a cloth. I have to say, my home, we do this sometimes. If we get an Amazon package, my wife will sometimes rub it down with a little baby wipe. We have baby wipes because we have a baby. But I don't do it at the mailbox, for example. And maybe I should, but the truth is we're not going to get our risk down to zero. If you can cut your risk by 80%, by 90%, you're doing a great job.
The mayor of Boston yesterday suggested that everybody be wearing a mask. I know it originally the CDC was not suggesting that. Then they kind of reversed course. What is the reason for the change there? And do you suggest that everybody should be wearing a mask at this point?
Yeah. So the mask guidance has been a little confusing. Are you guys ready to get into this for a few minutes?
Sure.
There's a couple of topics that we need to hit.
Yeah.
So the history of why the guidance was given in the first place. So a couple months ago, the World Health Organization gave some recommendations, and the CDC followed those recommendations. Those recommendations were that people who are symptomatic, people who are coughing, should wear masks. And otherwise, healthy people should not wear masks because they won't help you. Why did they give those recommendations? For two reasons. One, they believed that people wouldn't wear their masks properly, so they were worried that people would put a mask on, they would touch the outside, they would remove it and put it back on, and they didn't want this to be a source of, helping people get infected if they were misusing their masks. And two, they didn't want people to get a false sense of security when using these masks. So they didn't want people to put a mask on and then go, touch everything in the grocery store and stand really close to people and, inhale their coughs or their sneezes. And in retrospect, this was not a good idea. I think everybody now knows that nobody has a false sense of security with this epidemic, and people are treating it seriously. And I think this is why they reversed their guidance. They noticed that people would be willing to wear masks properly, and people would be willing to take this seriously and use the masks in addition to all the other precautions, not as a substitute for all the other precautions. So how do you wear one of these masks properly? So this is either a surgical mask or some other mask that you put on by having straps around your ears and a cloth or a paper covering over your mouth. Well, the most important thing is don't touch the outside of the mask. If the mask worked at all, the way that it worked is that some large droplet with mucus or water landed on the outside of the mask instead of landing inside your mouth. And when you take that mask off, you have to be careful not to touch the outside. You have to grab one of the straps behind your ears and carefully take the whole thing off without touching the outside. And if it's some sort of reusable mask, you then want to put it away somewhere where you can wash it immediately. Put it, dunk it in water, put it in, maybe you want to have soap and water ready so that you can wash it and reuse it the next day or later that day. But you don't want to use it in any way where you'll be touching the outside again, putting it back on your face, taking it off, and putting it back on your face. So that's part of the summary of where we are in the mask conversation.
What about 508 texter is wondering whether you should change clothes after coming home from grocery shopping and being out?
Again, we don't do this. And is it possible that somebody coughed and got a virus on you, you know, your sleeve? Yes, it's possible, but you'll never know that. There's no harm in doing it if you're taking your clothes off and trying to not touch the outsides, but I don't think it's necessary.
Here in Boston, John Santiago, who's an ER doctor at Boston Medical Center, also a state representative, tweeted over the weekend that things were picking up in Boston, not just in volume, but in how sick patients are presenting. Does that indicate some kind of a change in the virus?
Well, I don't know where this information, I don't know the origins of this information and why there's an increase in severity in patients coming into hospitals in Boston, so I won't comment on it. But I will comment on the virus itself. There has been no indication that the virus has changed or mutated in any meaningful way over the last 3 months.
Somebody had called earlier wanting us to ask you about, and I guess the term would be mutation, about, you know, H1N1 somehow mutating
the hantavirus.
The hantavirus is somehow mutating with coronavirus. Is that such a thing, doctor?
Well, viruses do mutate. All organisms in the world mutate. When you have kids, they have your genes with some random mutations in them. But some mutations are meaningful, and some mutations are meaningless. And the virus has mutated. We can track all the mutations because there's thousands of viruses that have been uploaded into GenBank, which is our national repository for the genes of everything that we sequence. But there have not been any meaningful indications, any meaningful mutations that would indicate that the virus is either transmitting better or worse, or is more deadly or less deadly. Nothing like that so far.
When we get through this two-week period, or when we get to some period of time where experts say that we have, flattened things, do you believe that social distancing will continue for an extended period of time?
This is the most difficult question that we're going to have to answer in a couple of weeks. Nobody's come out of this yet and figured out the right strategy after physical distancing or after social distancing. So let's say we're at 2 weeks. Let's say it's the middle of April, and we've now noticed that Massachusetts case counts have stabilized, that, you know, what they are right now, it's about at 1,200 to 1,400 new cases per day. Then maybe we will want to consider reopening some other, you know, non-essential services, as they're being called, or more essential services. I think the governor is going to make that decision in consultation with the Department of Public Health. I don't think we would relax physical and social distancing completely. I think we would do it slowly in stages, and I think we would monitor what effect it has. So, for example, in mid-April, we might let certain types of activities or businesses reopen for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks later, we would reassess and see if things got worse, better, or stayed the same.
But could the second wave really be as significant, if not possibly worse, than the first wave that we're experiencing right now?
Well, again, the second wave, if it hits, this is going to depend on us. I mean, the second wave could hit in May if we relax social distancing. The second wave could hit in the fall if we get a bit of a reprieve in the summer and the virus comes back in late fall when it gets colder. But we don't know any of these things yet. We don't know which scenario is more likely, and whether the wave is worse, better, or the same depends on which of these social and physical distancing measures we put into place, and also depends if we learn as to which ones are more effective and less effective at reducing the spread of the virus. I mean, in short, we don't know the answer to that question yet.
Dr. Maciek Boni is our guest from Penn State University. I wanted to ask about the herd immunity and whether or not I'm not an expert, so I look to you for the answer on this, but are we unable to develop that because are we going to be unable to develop that immunity because of what we've put in place when it comes to social distancing?
Yeah, this is the downside of social distancing. You slow down the epidemic, so people get infected more slowly, and that also means that people develop immunity more slowly. But the good side of that is if you let your population get infected gradually, you prevent surges in the health system, and you also allow fewer people to get infected total. So you will eventually get to herd immunity a bit more slowly. The process is slower, it's a bit more painful socially, but it's better in the long run because fewer people get infected and fewer people die. Now, for herd immunity to be meaningful, you need some percentage of the population to be immune. And it doesn't have to be 100%. It can be something like 80% or 85%. We don't really know what it is. But once we get to that point, the virus is no longer able to spread. And then if, say, a couple of years later, we lose a little bit of immunity and another epidemic comes in, that epidemic is smaller and milder, and it's a typical type of respiratory virus epidemic that we can deal with normal public health measures and not the extreme measures that we're seeing today.
A lot of texters concerned about their pets because of the news about the, was it the Brooklyn Zoo, Danielle, where the tiger tested positive?
Bronx Zoo.
Bronx Zoo. Any concern with pets when it comes to this, doctor?
Well, I'm more concerned that the Bronx Zoo had access to a coronavirus test that they used on a tiger.
Dr. Boni, they did say it was done in a veterinary lab, and they claimed the head vet said that it was not the same type of test that would be used on humans. They were very quick to get in front of that narrative.
Okay, good. I saw the headline, but I did not follow the story, and I do not know if the coronavirus can successfully infect cats and dogs.
Wow. That's yeah. Greg, I really think it was when the mayor said, this is what the mayor said to us yesterday, Dr. Boni. He said, if we can follow all of these steps and guidelines that you've been offering, that there's a chance we would have summer. If not, it effectively would be canceled. I mean, is there any more dire warning that you could give to people than, hey, what you look forward to the most every year can be taken away from you like that?
No, I think this is a great point that, people now understand, but, you know, as a result of this, you know, pretty serious communication from departments of health all over the country, people now understand how serious this is. But having one summer taken away, I mean, it's bad, but it's not the end of the world. People are now writing about this being a wartime mentality.
Yep.
In fighting the virus, the war on coronavirus, and the sense in which that's correct is that all of society is, in fact, upended, and all of society is, in fact, making a sacrifice because we have no choice. So this is the right type of warning to give people, and, yeah, if things go bad, we may have to make this sacrifice this year.
Dr. Boni, if you were on the board for President Trump or one of these major sports leagues like the NFL, what would you give as the best guess for guidance as to when they could resume playing their sports in front of people at their games?
Well, in front of people, no time soon. But without spectators, the sports leagues can decide this on their own. They can put together a testing plan for players, for example, or a testing plan for employees that are working in the arenas. And if you have, say, 100 people in one place, but there's mostly physical distancing except for, say, the 10 players that are on the court, but all 10 of those players have tested negative, this would be a rational approach to getting some sports leagues to have, say, half of a season. But with spectators, no, not anytime soon.
And what are these churches? There was a Ohio and then a couple of churches down south that have been open with hundreds of congregants during this pandemic. How does that impact the work we're doing locally? Does that impact, you know, the rest of the country that these are still going on while we're socially distancing in the Northeast?
Well, it doesn't impact us immediately. So it impacts the people in that local community immediately, and then it'll impact the people in a neighboring, in a neighboring county a few days later or maybe a week later. But the short answer is that it's a bad idea to have large congregations of people together within, you know, 1 foot of each other, whether it's a sporting event or a church or something else. So, I mean, I've seen in the news that a couple of mistakes have been made over the last couple weeks or over the last week, but, I mean, hopefully these types of events are being canceled nationwide now.
What about the suggestion that maybe we ought to be taking hydroxychloroquine or Quinn? Where do you stand on that, doctor?
This is a bad idea. So nobody should try to take chloroquine as either treatment or prophylaxis for coronavirus. And in fact, you should not take anything unless prescribed by your doctor. And specifically, chloroquine is dangerous because you can overdose on chloroquine, and a chloroquine overdose can be fatal. So if you have symptoms, please call your doctor. Do not just take chloroquine because it has been said on TV that it can have an effect on reducing coronavirus infection.
978 texter wants me to ask why Iran is in such a bad way if warm weather could theoretically kill off the virus. I guess you could ask the same question about Florida or somewhere here.
Nobody knows the answer to the question yet as to whether warmer weather will reduce viral transmission. It may. And warmer weather does reduce viral transmission for other respiratory viruses like influenza or some of the minor coughs and colds that we get. But that is not a guarantee that in June and July we will see a reduction in transmission. So we're going to wait until June and July. If the virus cuts us some slack in the summertime by lowering transmission, that does mean that it'll be a little bit safer to go outside and we'll be able to congregate in small groups. And it'll also give us an opportunity to retool our public health systems, our hospitals, and our testing capacity. But we won't know that for at least another couple months.
All right, doctor. Thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate the actual information, the factual information that you share with us when you're on every week. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. I'll talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.